This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome back to another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. I'm Marcus Papp, joined as always by Reggie Rizzou. On today's episode, for the first time in history, a child has been cured of a particular type of brain cancer. We'll tell you more. This week's Weird Wednesday includes an odd race, strange raccoons, and another Guinness World Record. And this day in history, the flying car may have been around longer than you think. Coming up, it's Cool Stuff. Brainstem glioma. That's not something any person wants to hear when visiting the doctor's office, much less when it pertains to their child. It refers to all subtypes of astrocytomas that occur in the brainstem, astrocytoma being synonymous with cancer in this instance. Now, brainstem gliomas account for roughly 20% of all pediatric primary brain tumors, and the long-term prognosis is not good. Survival times range from 1 month to 7 years per the National Library of Medicine, with the median survival time at 24 months, that per a 2021 study published in the medical journal Frontiers. So that's the bad news. And now here's the cool part. A Belgian boy named Lucas has become the first child in the world to be cured of brainstem glioma after being diagnosed with a rare brain tumor at just 6 years of age. And now here we are in 2024, Lucas is still going strong. He's now 13, and there's no trace of the tumor that once grew on his brainstem. Quote, Lucas beat all the odds, end quote. That from Dr. Grill, head of the brain tumor program at the Gustave Roussy Cancer Center in Paris, where Lucas was treated. He spoke with the Straits Times for a profile piece on Lucas's history. That's an English language newspaper out of Singapore. For background, this particular type of tumor has the medical name diffuse intrinsic pontine glioma, or DIPG. It's diagnosed each year in approximately 300 children in the United States and up to 100 in France. As mentioned, the outlook is bleak for those diagnosed. Radiotherapy can sometimes slow the rapid progression of the tumor, but so far no drug is really shown to be especially effective against it, at least until now. Lucas and his family traveled from Belgium to France so he could become one of the first patients to join the BioMed trial, which tests potential new drugs for DIPG. Per the Straits Times report, Lucas immediately responded favorably to the cancer drug everolimus, which he was randomly assigned. Dr. Grill told the French press, quote, over a series of MRI scans, I watched as the tumor completely disappeared, end quote. Even after the tumor disappeared, the doctors opted to continue the treatment out of an abundance of caution. They finally okayed Lucas to stop taking said drug about a year and a half ago, and by that time, Lucas actually admitted he was no longer taking the drugs anyway. So there are some obvious questions you're undoubtedly asking yourself right now. Why was this drug so effective in treating Lucas? And can it be used to achieve the same result in others? Unfortunately, the answers to those questions are still a bit nebulous. Researchers still aren't sure why Lucas responded so favorably. Seven other children in the trial survived years after being diagnosed, which is a step forward in its own right, obviously. But only Lucas's tumor completely vanished. Dr. Grill believes biology, or biological particularities, as he put it, play a role in determining who will respond favorably and who won't. Said Grill, quote, Lucas's tumor had an extremely rare mutation, which we believe made its cells far more sensitive to the drug, end quote. As such, the researchers are now studying the genetic abnormalities of patients' tumors, as well as creating tumor organoids, I'm using air quotes as I say that, which are masses of cells produced in the lab. Marie-Anne Debilly is a researcher supervising the lab work. She told the French press, quote, Lucas's case offers real hope. We will try to reproduce in vitro the differences that we have identified in his cells, end quote. Now, the team wants to reproduce his genetic differences in the organoids to see if the tumor can then be killed off as effectively as it was in Lucas. If that works, the next step will be to find a drug that has the same effect on tumor cells as these cellular changes. And while the researchers are justifiably excited about this new lead, they're quick to point out that any real treatment option is still a long ways off, said Dr. Grill, quote, "On average, it takes 10 to 15 years from the first lead to become a drug. It's a long and drawn-out process," end quote. Of course, that's not meant to temper optimism. The French press also spoke with Dr. David Ziegler, a pediatric oncologist at Sydney Children's Hospital in Australia. He pointed out that the medical community's understanding of DIPG has come a long way in the last 10 years, and breakthroughs in the lab, increased funding, and trials such as Biomed make him, quote, "convinced that we will soon find that we are able to cure some patients," end quote. "We all hope to see cancer eradicated as soon as possible," obvious statement there, but for the time being, little by little, it seems we're making some progress.
It is unfortunate that it takes so long for these processes to take place, but it makes sense. You have to test it. You have to make sure it works. You don't want to just start throwing this drug on the market, which then potentially cause more harm than good. So unfortunately, that time frame is there, but this seems very positive. And hopefully, you know, we'll get it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, you raise a great point, Reggie. I think in instances like this, we sit back and go, why is there so much red tape to cut through? Why do you have to do this and that and the other before we can finally start treating people? The reality of the matter is, if you didn't have these things in place, you would have so many harmful drugs put out on the market by pharmaceutical companies that are just hoping to see positive results and potentially make money off them. So it is important, I still very much believe, to go through the proper protocol, the proper processes. And obviously, we saw in this case with Lucas, he was able to attend a trial because his parents approved of such. And you just hope that other children in a similar boat might be able to do something like that to look at some experimental treatments that might ultimately help them. But in the meantime, we wait and we hope that this drug and perhaps some others that are discovered as part of this trial will have positive impacts on people in the long haul, and we won't see too many side effects come with that.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Now, stepping away from the serious to something a little more lighthearted, it's time for another
Weird
Wednesday. All right, we start off in Olney, England, with a very unique race. Yes, there is running in this race, but it also involves pancakes.
Of course it does.
Naturally. I mean, what good race doesn't have pancakes? And I'm not talking pancakes before. You know, sometimes you want to carb up or whatever. That's not the case here.
New York Marathon, people are out there with their waters. I'm holding out pancakes just in case they're hungry on the way by.
Per the AP, last week, women were lined up in matching checkered aprons, headscarves, and an assortment of running shoes to take part in a centuries-old pancake race across town. They waited on the starting line. The runners rolled up their aprons, stretched and prepared their bodies to run with a frying pan in hand that contained said pancake. Now, when the race started, they all took off trying not to drop their pancakes as they copied the path taken by a housewife in 1445. Legend has it that she heard the church bell signaling the Shrove Tuesday service and she took off with skillet in hand.
Wow. You really, really want to get down to the church. I mean, all it would take is to set the thing down.
Well, I think it you know, frazzled her and she just took off. It was in her hand. She forgot about it. So she just took off with the pancake in hand. Or
I can't be at church and hungry. I was going to say,
you don't want your stomach rumbling in church. That's rude.
Right.
So you bring your pancake and you eat it. This year's winner was Kesa Larkus, a 44-year-old mother of four. She won the title by completing the race in 63.37 seconds. Quote, "It's a horrible distance. You just have to go flat out and then hope you're not going to fall over. But it's good fun," end quote. However, Olney isn't the only place that runs this race. If you don't want to head to England, the U.S. has their own version in the town of Liberal, Kansas. They copied the idea and started running it 75 years ago. This year's winner was a 19-year-old college student and nursing assistant, Pamela Bolivar. She bested the England time by finishing in 63.03 seconds. That was the closest time ever between those two towns. The Kansas race is held the day before the start of Lent. So any interest in checking out the pancake race, Marcus?
I don't know if I need to go see this for myself. I've got a lot of other reasons I'd like to go to England and things to see while I'm there. But if I came across it, I might stop and watch for a few seconds. The whole race, because it took all of, just over a minute? I can handle that.
Not really worth flying to England to see a minute-long race.
Yes, you nailed it there. I think I could replicate that myself here in my neighborhood, probably.
Yeah, just get all your neighbors lined up, find whatever would take about a minute, and say, let's run! There we go.
Or they're just watching me run around the neighborhood with a skillet in hand and a single pancake.
Just another Saturday morning.
Marcus is at it again. Shut the blinds.
Well, we've heard stories before about wallets turning up after missing for years. But here's one where they didn't have to go find the owner because the owner was the one to find the wallet after nearly a year of being lost. The owner of the wallet said they live on a remote island in British Columbia and they don't have a dock. So they take a canoe to get to their boat. Quote, I had my wallet in an unzip pocket of my backpack. I had forgotten to zip it. When I went to hop onto the boat from the canoe, I heard a splash. I just assumed it was the way the water was splashing and didn't think anything of it, end quote. She did have the diver come look for the wallet. They didn't have any success. Fast forward to the present day, it washed up on the beach and she found it walking her dogs. I guess everything inside the wallet were all in pretty good condition, except for that zipper. It was a little corroded.
I'd love to know what else she had in there.
She had some money. I believe it was pictures.
Blockbuster card.
Blockbuster card, naturally. a few credit cards, you know. A handgun. No, I don't know what else she had in there. She didn't really label it out. But there was some change, some money. You know, ID, stuff like that. Now we head off to the raccoons. Those little thieves. Just look at their eyes. You know, they're trying to cover up their identities, Marcus. That's all that is. It's not
real.
They're little thieves. You can't trust them.
Wow.
In Florida, a woman caught three raccoons stealing her DoorDash taco order. Katerina Savares went to grab her order, but when she opened the door to grab her Talking Tacos order, she found the raccoons have gotten to the bag and started eating the meal. Quote, once they started hissing, I shut the door so fast, I was like, they can have the carne asada. It's fine, end quote. Now, they must not have liked the tortillas, though, because they left those alone and ate everything else. Also, after this video went viral, the restaurant gave Katerina a $100 gift card. Hopefully, she just picks up the order in person next time.
Where do these raccoons live? They must be close if they're just stopping by her front porch in what I assume in my mind is a neighborhood somewhere with a lot of people.
It wasn't even a front porch. It looked like she lived in an apartment and they got into the building.
Oh, wow.
I watched the video. That's what it looks like. Or at least, you know, one of those apartments where you kind of have to go down a hallway outside. So it's not like you're just a front porch of your house. It was more of an apartment look. And those raccoons, and one of them even stood up as she opened the door, like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, I would slam that thing, because we all know raccoons in the wild, not the nicest creatures.
But they do have those thumbs, so, you know, that's pretty cool. They can give you a thumbs up if they enjoyed the meal.
I didn't say they weren't cool.
All right, now we head off to England, where a raccoon was on the loose for almost 2 months. Three raccoons, must be a thing, traveling in threes, I don't know, escaped from the Sunderland Training and Education Farm in South Hilton around the end of December. The two female raccoons, Rocket and Pinch, were captured in January, but the male raccoon, Miko, remained at large.
Crafty.
Yeah, he is crafty. Though that was until he was spotted at a nearby farm. He escaped up the tree. Workers felled the tree and captured him before he could make his escape again. Do you think it's
Man, you had to cut down the tree just to get this
I know.
Guy?
I thought that was a little extreme. Hopefully they were planning on cutting down the tree anyways, because just to get the raccoon, I don't know if I would have cut down the tree.
Yeah, it seems really like you're pretty lazy, huh?
That had to be a pretty valuable raccoon to cut down an entire
tree.
Yeah,
that's the other thing here. Why are we so concerned? It seems like the raccoon's living in the wild doing its thing. Is he of utmost importance to be returned?
It's a great question. Iain Watson, the Hartlepool-based raccoon rescue in UK, told the BBC, quote, it's his territory. He knows there was food there. He was raiding other animals' enclosures. It's amazing none of the cameras had spotted him. Maybe he needs a job with MI5 or MI6, end quote. Maybe that's his true reason. Maybe that's why they cut down a tree. He already has a special mission, if he chose to accept it. Now, all three raccoons are safely home after 3 months, and no animal or person was harmed, just a tree.
Just a tree.
Finally, we're going to close off Weird Wednesday with this week's Guinness World Record story. Sophia Hayden broke the Guinness World Record for the most sweaters worn at once.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, why not? She put on 45 sweaters at her local library to break the record. Per the Guinness World Record rules, she had to put each one on individually and pull it down to her waist. They also had to make sure that none of them ripped while putting them on, as that would violate the rules. I mean, seriously.
Of course it would.
Who takes the time to write these rules and make them up? And can I get that job? I can make up arbitrary rules just as good as anyone else.
Sweaters can't be ripped.
Yeah.
Come on down to your local library and give it a shot.
Her mother said, quote, "It took a long time to gather enough sweaters for this attempt," end quote. All the sweaters used were eventually donated to a charity when they were done.
Well, that's even better. Not only do you take on this wacky, bizarre attempt, but you have to curate the sweater collection yourself?
And 45 sweaters. And, you know, you have to get to a certain size at a certain point that you might be able start with that small or medium. But by the end, you have to get that triple XL, I'm assuming.
You're right. It's a good point. I can only assume that Sophia must be a smaller individual. I don't know too many other people that are really anxious to try this either way. So I think we're safe.
I mean, maybe when my wife gets cold at home, she might put on 45 sweaters. I don't know. But beyond that, no.
That must be the hottest setup ever. 45 sweaters on. I mean, get me out of that stuff immediately.
There's a reason why she did it in winter.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Looking at this day in history, it was on February 21st, 1937, that the initial flight of the first successful flying car occurred. You heard
Wait,
me
what?
Correct there, Marcus.
What?
1937.
Flying cars in 1937?
Yeah, which begs the question, why don't we have flying cars now?
Yeah, it does beg that question.
It was Waldo Watermans, which, by the way, great name. I love the alliteration. It was his Aerobile that accomplished the feat. It was built by Westerman Aeroplane Corporation in Santa Monica, California. The name Aerobile is a play on words, as the Aeroplane Corporation and the Aerobile are both spelled as A-R-R-O-W. The top airspeed, I mean, it's not slow either, 120 miles per hour and 70 miles per hour on the ground.
Wow.
Aero engineer Waldo Dean Waterman designed the flying car, and it was described as simple, easy to fly, and low cost, and were supplied with a 100 horsepower engines from the Studebaker Corporation, which again begs the question, if it was easy to fly and cheap, why don't we have flying cars?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cars weren't really designed for road use as they were prototypes. Waterman did end up forming his own company, the Waterman Aeroplane Co. in 1935. With the goal of developing one for road use. Unfortunately, clearly that didn't succeed. Part of that, which I think kind of explains why we don't have cars, the aeroplane did have a competitor, the Gwin Air Car. But the development for that was abandoned in 1938 after a crash that killed the pilot and his passenger. So there is a little bit of a downer here, and I think that's probably why they pulled away on the air cars.
I mean, obviously we still have hurdles to overcome even with the more modern attempts at this. And we've discussed this on the show. People would have to get their pilot's license, and that's not always the easiest thing to obtain. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it does take time, and it certainly takes energy and a desire to want to go out there and gain that license. And not everybody has that. So would it have ultimately been a profitable venture? Tough to say.
As for profitable, it was cheap. So if they would have continued on, maybe. And yeah, like I said, who knows? We may be in the Jetsons world right now if they would have continued on.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is interesting to hear that it wasn't all that expensive to make. But at the same time, I mean, how many units can you actually sell? That'd be the question that I'd have. That said, this is astounding. Like, I had no idea something like this happened. Well, not quite, but you know what, 90 years ago, essentially.
Yeah, not too long after the airplane was invented, really, if you look at it.
Right.
That we went from, well, let's have a car, not too long after the cars were invented. let's put them together. And then we just kind of abandoned the idea for years there.
I have long since wondered how we would control traffic in the sky where, you know, you're working in three dimensions, unlike on just a traditional road. That looks like a nightmare in Back to the Future too. I'm not sure. I mean, it's scary enough driving in some big cities nowadays, but to be up there in the sky like that, yikes.
That'll do it for another edition of Cool Stuff Ride Home. Like us, follow us, leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also contact us at coolstuffcommute@gmail.com. I'm Reggie Rizzou. He's Marcus Paff. We'll be back with more cool stuff tomorrow.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.